People, welcome to the Most High Show. My name is David, and I will be your host. And I'm in this room, in this studio, with just some dudes that I love, man, with all my heart, man. And we are going to give you real stories from real people sharing their real lives and their journeys, man. Tonight, we got a guy named Mossberg. He's going to be sitting in the virtual decadent seat of service. And we're going to get into his story, but first we're going to have a mystic moment, and you're going to get all this after these messages, my friends.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
What's going on again? Welcome back, folks. Again, this is the Most High Show. My name is David. I'll be hosting this thing right here. And again, we have my brother Mossberg in the seat of service. And what we'd like to do on the Most High Show, we'd like to start off by what we call the mystical moment. And the reason we call it a mystical moment is because it's brought to you by a very mystical man. And his name is the Reverend Christian Jansen. What's up, my dude?
What up? What up?
Get mystical with me, homie.
Today, we're going to read from a poem from Hafez, which I've read from here. And this is a book called I Heard God Laughing.
Right.
Since we have Mossberg and he is a music man, I thought this would be...
The music man.
This would be a good one to read. The title of this is I Took It as a Sign.
Okay.
Someone sent a band to my house, and it started playing at 5 a.m. I took it as a sign. God wanted me to sing. Then the moon joined in, and a few of the tenor-voiced stars, and the earth offered its lovely belly as a drum. Before I knew it, I realized all human beings could be happy if they just had a few music lessons from a sweet old maestro like Hafez.
Woo. Man, that was mystical as all mysticals can be right
Pretty
there.
Much.
I actually, while you were reading that, I saw an earth belly being played like a drum.
Yeah.
Whatever that looks like, dude. Yeah. I don't even know. Made me feel a little... trippy.
Yeah. I took it as a sign. Someone sent a band to my house and it started playing at 5 a.m. The thing that Hafez does a lot is, and we do this, right? We look at situations in our life, predicaments, circumstances, and our thinking mind, our judgment mind will say, we'll assign it to one or two categories, good or bad, right? And if a band shows up at your house at 5 a.m. and starts playing, right, most people would be annoyed at that.
Right.
Right?
Especially if it was like a mariachi band.
Oh, I love mariachi
band. Mariachi, oh, like playing at 5 a.m. in the morning, though.
The guitar on, man. You ever seen someone just plicking at that guitar?
Man. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, yeah.
And so he does this in several poems, and... And I've found this to be true, that the divine, even when I've assigned something that's bad, right, that God can still work through it, right? The Apostle Paul talks about that when all things work for the good of those who are in Christ Jesus, right?
Amen. Yeah.
Getting at this thing that that if we're open to it is the key piece.
Yeah.
If we're open, that... bad things can turn into quote unquote good things.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the first thing that when I read that, that's what I think of, is how at 5 a.m, he took it as a sign that God wanted him to sing.
Mm.
Right. As opposed to a sign that, these fools are on the lawn playing.
Right.
Right.
Right. God wanted him to join in.
Yeah. So immediately looking at where can I participate? How can I get involved? How is this an opportunity, right?
Mm.
You know, you hear like business people, I don't look at challenges. I think of opportunities.
Yeah. Right?
And so looking
that's at. That's Kyle and I, but that's what this is saying.
Yeah. Right? He sees it as this is a sign that God wants me to sing.
Right.
Right. And then as he partakes and participates in this thing that he could have easily assigned judgment as this is bad, this is not what should be happening. Right.
Right.
There's a couple things. There's also an immediate acceptance of what's happening.
That's heavy.
Right.
And how do you even do that?
Right. And we skip acceptance.
Yeah.
We go awareness. We don't accept and we go to action. Right.
Right.
It's really AAA awareness, acceptance, then action. What happens is we become aware of something, maybe a bad habit, maybe a situation. Mm-hmm. Rather than accepting it for what it is, right, we go right into action to try to fix it or change it.
Right.
And so there's acceptance there. Because he's accepted it and because he's allowed himself to participate, it becomes a mystical, beautiful, wondrous thing.
Right.
Right? Where it's the moon and the stars and the earth.
The whole world just comes in tune. Thing. Melodically. Right.
And I think that's why, you know, he says that that all human beings could be happy if they just had a few music lessons from the sweet old maestro like Hafez, right?
Right.
Himself, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's trying to tune us into this reality that it is all beautiful and it's all happening. And
good, bad, whatever. If it hits you in a weird way or a bad way, you know, get to the acceptance and see what you can make out of it.
Yeah.
Join into it instead of trying to fight it off or turn your head from it and make it go away.
Right.
Absorb it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and this is great on a mystic moment in a podcast reading a poem.
Right. And poetically, it's beautiful.
Right. Now, try to apply this when I wake up in the morning and there ain't no coffee in the house.
Yeah.
And I can't get my caffeine fix.
Right.
Right. Am I going, God wants me to go back to sleep or leave and go to the store or the cafe shop, right? Who knows? I don't know. But I'm not normally taking those instances with this kind of awe and wonder. Mm-hmm. It's almost childlike.
Right. Innocent.
Innocent.
Yeah.
Unless you become like these little children, you shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven. Because unless you participate and wonder and in amazement
in all of things. Yeah, in all
you can't inherit the kingdom.
Right, because appreciate it.
Yeah.
Amazed by it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not going to get the thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be fighting for, and it's the same for me. I'm always going to be fighting for my own version of events. I'm going to be wanting to put my stake. What am I getting out of it?
You want to put your flag up.
Right.
You want to stick your flag down. You want to be heard. You want to be right. And you want to be understood as right. Now I've changed your mind. Now you're thinking like me. Right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I dig that. I think when I think about that and I think of the process of doing that, like applying this beautiful, you know, wondrous way of thinking into my everyday life, it kind of makes me think of being like, you know, being hurt. Somebody really hurting my feelings, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Now, I can't make that hurt necessarily go away, but I do definitely have control of my reaction. Okay. So the hurt instinctually hits me, right? Now, how am I going to take it? What am I going to do with it? How am I going to react to it? Because I do have control of that. You know what I'm saying? And again, I'm far from perfect, but I think, you know, ideas and philosophies like this really, you know, what's going through my head is whatever hurts me, if I can take it in and try to, I guess, like, kind of like make it right or like join it, be open-minded about it, be willing to think about it beyond my own, that own instinctual hurt. And going with that instead, going with what that is, what is hurting me, and joining into that and really trying to make sense out of it.
And feeling the hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Like we are very pain adverse.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we're trying to immediately, if we don't feel the way we want to feel, we want to immediately change that.
Right.
Humans in general.
Absolutely. Crystal meth does that very quickly.
Right. So dope. To accept that heroin, the pain is a, it, like the reason why it hurts, right? And is because there's something in you that's resonating with it,
mm-hmm.
right? When you are disturbed, it is you who is disturbed,
yeah,
right? There's something in you that's resonating. That's why it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, it's not what that person said. It's not what they did. It's how you internally reacted to it, how you connected to it, how you assigned value to it, and then how you said, now that means I'm hurt, right?
Yeah.
And that can be painful, and you can project that externally, or you can say, what's resonating in me that's interpreting this as a hurt?
Yeah.
Right? Because pain is our greatest teacher. Right. So when we're feeling that uncomfortableness, that hurt, mm-hmm. that discomfort when someone says or does something right. to us that hurts us.
Insults you, hurts your feelings, embarrasses you.
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
Right. Is the opportunity there is to go, what in me is resonating with this?
Why is this hurting me?
Why? That's not really why. I don't like why.
You know what it is.
What is it?
Yeah. Well, what he said to you, what is it about what he said to you that's hurting you?
It's what not about this? What they said. It's about what in me is resonating. Yeah. Right? Because right. someone can say something to me that they don't mean anything by it.
Yeah.
This happened to me today. Someone texted me. They got no clue that they're affecting me the way they're affecting me.
Right.
They're being very professional. Right? Mm-hmm. But it's affecting me. The reason why it's affecting me is... not really as important as what is happening in me, right? What's happening in me is I'm having a desire to rebel, or a desire to cut it off, a desire to F you, a desire to, you know.
You want to get rid of it.
I want to hurt back.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to what is resonating in me is some sense of my own self-doubt.
So it's like, what in me is causing this reaction from those words being said or that thing that happened?
Because why is a story we tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And boy, you know the story.
Because why?
I mean, you sit and listen to people's stories all day long.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Right. And you're trying
and
to help
ultimately,
them.
I'm going, what's in you?
Yes.
What is this? Right. Why are you feeling this
way? You ever want to cut someone's story out halfway through and go,
I think I might do that sometimes. Whoa.
I don't need to hear about your mom again.
Hold up. I got it. Mom's an asshole. Dad doesn't listen. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? Not why. What?
Right.
What are you going to do with
what
that?
What is in you?
Yeah.
That hurts when that's said.
Mossberg's over here.
Mossberg, what you doing, man? You doing karate back there? What you doing? A karate fight?
He's cleaning his room.
I thought he was doing like a karate or something, man. Yo, Moss, where you at, man? We asked.
That's how interesting this is. Mossberg just started.
Moss just jumped around and started doing karate kicks or something. And I don't know what he was doing. Moss, did you hear the poem? Did you listen in on the poem?
I did hear the poem. Sorry, I had to get off real quick. I was had to put a little sign out real quick.
No, you good, brother. You good, man. What did you get out of that, man?
You know, while I was listening to that, I kept thinking back. I wasn't thinking much about guys showing up at the doorstep. I was thinking about David and Saul. No joke. You know, especially when Christian started talking about the projection of the music, you know, it takes me to my thoughts about anything that we're doing. What's it about? What's it for? And David, he actually defeated spirits with his music. You know, and it's the same thing this guy's doing with the poetry. It's the same thing I try to do with my music, what you guys are doing with the show. It's all the same, you know.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, the vibrations.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Absolutely. We're just trying to spread the positive vibe.
No matter how far or what length Saul would go chasing David all over the place, just following him. I'm gonna play this song. He was,
break out the heart.
He was in that throne and he was being oppressed by those spirits, you know. And David comes walking in and he comes to go see his king and greet his king. And Saul's just sitting there all defeated and deteriorating. And what did David do? He broke out the harp.
I like that, bro.
He played the Hallelujah, and
I'm digging that.
It rejuvenated his king. It brought the it was a service. It was a service there with a message, and it was a testimony in like you said, vibration and sound, and it did the job.
I like it, dude. I'm telling you right now, this might be the most mystical thing you've brought to the table. No, that was beautiful, dude. I love the idea of, kind of like accepting, accepting it and then dealing with it and joining it and trying to get something out of it. I love that. That's cool. Folks, what you just witnessed right here was our mystic moment. And after these messages, we're going to get to what I like to call the meat of the show with my man Mossberg after this.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives.
There is a phrase that says it is better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. And I feel like I'm a vet from a war zone, and I feel very comfortable being in the garden, knowing that this is the best place for me. But under extreme circumstances, the warrior can return if necessary, and hopefully that never has to happen.
People, welcome back. Welcome back. And I want to take this time to welcome my good brother, Mossberg, to the seat of service. Yo, listen, man, the Most High Show welcomes you and thanks you for, having the courage to sit up and like try to give it away, man, and share a little bit about yourself. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate that.
Thank you for that.
So check it out. Yep, absolutely. So check it out. This is what we like to do on the Most High Show, all right? We try to do a full circle thing, right? So to start that circle off, I'd like to know, what is life like for my man Mossberg today?
Right now, life is nothing but opportunity and opening doors. And of course, for some to open, some have to close. But man, I'm telling you, I've been closer to I've never been closer to my creator than I am now. And I'm loving life. I'm loving it.
Awesome, awesome. Now, so your life right now, you're in recovery. You are rocking out at a residential place. And
I am.
And you got some responsibilities there, right?
Yeah, I'm what they call a house parent here at Modern Pathways to Recovery in Athens, Georgia. And I've got some really great guys that I'm in recovery with, and some of which I wouldn't have been able to make it this far without, But it's definitely a challenge, and it's an honor. It's my purpose.
Well, right now, I just want to thank you for your service and all that, for what you're doing out there. Being a house parent comes with a lot of responsibility, a lot of everyday stuff that you got to deal with every second. It's you don't know necessarily what's going to be happening as the day goes by with people that you're caring on and loving on, And it's a tough position to be in. But you're doing that, right? You are doing service work. You are in recovery. You're working recovery on a daily basis, right? But
that's correct.
But my man, it was not always like that, right?
Not at all.
Yeah. So what we like to do now is I want to go back a little bit, or all the way back, wherever you want to be, wherever you think it would pertain to somebody's ears. What was it like? What is that journey like, to get you to where you're at today?
Well, you hear that everything has a purpose, everything has a rhyme and a reason for it, and it as it was stated earlier, all things work together for the greater good for those who are called. And I do consider this a calling, but yeah, it all started, like everybody else, just about this suffered addiction or even mental health issues. There's tragedy.
Yeah.
But, there's now a reason for that. And I can look back, you know, look back on it and see the reason why I was put in the positions I was put in and why life happened the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
And, it wasn't always about life happening either. I didn't handle things the way I should have. And addiction came hard. I take responsibility for mine.
Yeah. What did, you know, so what was it about, you know, life that, you know, would have you look at an escape or take, you know, narcotics or alcohol or whatever, you know, whatever you're going through? What was it, you know, looking back on that? Was it poor choices? Was it like, you know, trauma, a little bit of both? What was that all about?
Well, it started with the trauma. You know, I mean, my very first memory in life was a trauma. You know, I accidentally shot my dad when I was 3 years old. Didn't kill him. But, you know, that comes with repercussions. Ooh, and it has a ripple effect. You know, my brother was present. That turned into abuse. The abuse took form and carried over. You know, my mom's poor choice of husbands, her addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a long domino effect of things that happened, and lots of addiction, lots of death. But you know, we all go through that as addicts in some form or fashion.
Yeah,
life ain't all peaches and cream.
No,
but you know, you can take the lemons and make lemonade, or you can let them rot. It's what you do with it.
So can you tell us, you got to tell us the story of how you shot your dad and didn't kill him. But we need to know, because you can't leave us
out. We can't leave that just hanging out in the
room. It's funny that somebody mentioned Smith and Wesson earlier. So my dad, he's always been the straight edge, suit and tie guy all my life, working in corporate security, always carried a Smith and Wesson snub nose under his seat. And back in 1980, there's no child restraint laws. No safety in child car seats or anything like that. So I'm 3 or 4. I'm in the floorboard in the back seat of his car going 85 mile an hour down I-20 in Atlanta. My brother's riding shotgun. He's about 9 years older than me, and or 6 years older than me. He was about 9. I was probably about 3. And I guess somehow or another, I wound up with that gun in my hand. And
just messing around on the floorboards, probably looking around.
Yeah, crawling up under the seat and whatnot. And my memory is based all on, of course, the after effect, mostly for what I remember. And then, of course, the way it was told from my dad and my brother's point of view. My brother turned around and he saw me, and I had the grip in my hand, thumbs on the trigger, with barrel pointed at me. And then, you know, I hear Mike, no, and that jerked me. And when it did, you know, the gun went off, and it shot straight up through the back of my dad's seat. And he didn't even realize he was shot. Now, at this point, this is where my memory comes in, because, and this is, I was later diagnosed with a post-traumatic stress syndrome for this. I still at times wake up with the taste and smell of gunpowder and the ears ringing. But you know, I don't dwell on it, but you know, it builds up, because my dad pulls over to check his tires to see which one he blew. My brother's in shock, and it's not until my dad sees the blood that he's like, Jesus, Mike, you shot me. And he pulls me into his lap. My brother's screaming, go to the Salvation Army, they can help.
How old is your brother?
But we wound up, at this time he was 9.
Oh, 9 years old. Okay, my bad.
Right. But we wound up at the ER, and we walk in, and by the time my dad's carrying me in his arms, you know, he just took a slug to the back, and he's toting me, and from his shoulders down, he's drenched in blood. I'm drenched in blood. My brother's got blood all over him. And the nurse runs up and says, give me the baby. What happened to the baby? And my dad screams, the freaking baby shot me. So they take me and go to cleaning me off, and my dad's story kicks in. He says he's in there telling the whole thing to the doc. And all of a sudden he hears a clink, clink. The doctor says, you're going to feel a pinch, and then clink, clink. And apparently the doc squeezed it like a zit, and the slug fell out. Apparently it went up through the seat and bounced, because those old cars, they had the springs in the seats and whatnot. And it just ricocheted up and just barely went in my dad's back. But to this day, he carries that book in a coffee mug in his desk, or on his desk in his house. He says it's the most important lesson he ever learned. And, of course, we all got some stuff out of it. I think that's a lot of what triggered my brother into his abusive behavior. Mm-hmm. Right after that, my mom and dad got divorced and went their separate ways, and it got real bad toxic. And I think a 9-year-old kid puts two and two together and makes six or seven, you know?
Mm-hmm. And he's blaming you for it, right? You
know? Partially.
Yeah.
And, but... it carried over. He got real addicted too, and he was the one that introduced me to the heroin, which I had not done it when he was alive, but he overdosed himself and died New Year's Day 03.
Yeah, man, I'm sorry to hear that, bro. Speedball,
heroin and coke. Well, you know, I had been through death before. Right after that, I lost a couple of other buddies to addiction, and then later my mom. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until my own overdose that the true Michael Moss could come through. You know, God's purpose for me would take form. There was some buildup before in my addiction, and I know God was with me. Yeah. I know He was with me. I remember times now when He spoke to me. And it sobered me up. Or he would, you know, I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and you're with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's I take that very seriously, because when I was in the valley, he was there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here now.
Mm-hmm.
And then along about the 18th or 19th of January this year, 19 years to the month after my brother's heroin and coke speedball overdose, I had my own heroin and meth, both laced with fentanyl.
Now, was your brother on your mind that night? While you're using that night, was it like a sort of like a, you know, he's on your mind, you're living a chaotic life? Did it have anything to do with what happened to you? Like, if it's 19, what did you say, 19 years to the day or something? Like, what did you say?
To the month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that, is that a rough time for you, that time of the year?
Yeah, that time of the year has always been rough. I used to just take Jack Daniels out into the woods and wake up like on the second or third. I'd go isolate and drink myself into a frenzy. But no, this time that wasn't it. You know, he's always been at the forefront of my mind. But like I said, over the past few years, a couple of years, slowly but surely, there's been some awakening going on, even through the haze of my addiction.
Yeah.
I had called my buddy Edmund Patterson, who runs MBR, him and his partner Shane Sims.
Mm-hmm.
But I called Edmund up because I knew he had a place in recovery, and I just got tired, guys. I just got so tired. I had been tired and getting even more tired, and I had just run myself into a point to where I no longer cared about anything but either end it or fix it, one or the other. And I had prayed over and over for the end in prison. I've done a couple of stints in prison, and I prayed for death consistently for a couple months this last ride. Wow. Until finally, this is one of those times where I tell you, I hear the voice of God. He says, no, son, you've been dying since you were born. Go live. And that's when this domino effect started happening, slowly at first and then rapidly, until January this year. I called Edmund up and I said, look, man, I'm done, bro. I'm done living this life. It's either the end or the beginning. Can you help me? And he says, well, we'll put you on the waiting list. You're about a month out.
This is when
I look over my buddy and I say, look, I'm going to rehab. It's been about a month. You know, I need to go ahead and start coming off this stuff. Work me one up so I can say goodbye. And it turned into good night instead of goodbye. Yeah.
So that's when you overdosed.
That's right.
Wow.
Right after talking to a dude, getting ready to go to
hearing from the Lord,
a program,
all of it. Let me just tie one on real quick.
And that happens a lot. That's, you know, saying goodbye to that. Like, this is my last night.
Yeah.
I'm about to go get, let me do this tonight. You know what I mean? And then I'm going to go tighten everything up tomorrow.
Or like when you know, I know that's how I was before I went into rehab. I turned up really hard because I knew it was going to end.
Yeah.
Or if you're getting ready to go to prison or jail, right? Yeah. You turn it on real much because you know you're going to go and you're not going to be able to do that. Right. So you're looking for the last hoorah.
Yeah, and pretty much. Just go out with a bang.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did they, how did you, were you resuscitated? Did they call EMT? Like what happened?
I like to call it chemical defibrillation. They hit me with the Narcan and thank God almighty.
Hey man, boy, that Narcan is something else. That's the saver,
and I'm
boy.
A firm advocate. They said that I hit and they turned their heads for a minute. And by the time they turned back, my head was back. I was pale, lips blue. They tried CPR and it failed. And they hit me with the Narcan. Then they say I fought them for a good minute. And I mean, they said I fought hard. And I didn't at first know what to believe about that. But the next day, my body proved them right. I was so sore. Mm-hmm. But I woke up in a shower. Without fully clothed, sitting in the shower, but one shoe was missing, and I got this cold water beating down on me. I'm looking around at these people, and slowly I'm like, I think I know these people, you know. But I didn't even remember my own name, and I knew there was this feeling that started. And it finally, when I could comprehend what was going on, I knew immediately I had not been saved. I had been recruited. Wow. And there was purpose. This was not, it was not, okay, you gave you, it was about you all this time. And I've always been the codependent, and so bad with the codependency that I was self-serving because I felt like I wasn't getting everything in life that I needed or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that moment I knew that it's been about you this whole time, with good, bad, or indifferent. Now it's not about you anymore, Mike. It's not about Mossberg, you know? Yeah. And from then on, man, I'm going to tell you something. It has been a blast. Just daily living. You know, my mom, this October 9th just passed. That's the date of my mom's overdose. The only difference, my mom's was on pills and hers was accidental. My brother's was intentional. He went out the way he said he was going to go out. He meant to. Mine was accidental. Mom's was accidental. And I found her October 9th of 2011. But I was able to make it through this time without any thoughts of any of that because I know now through this, I got to say, spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
nothing wrong with saying that. It sounds like this exactly you got it just right.
Oh man, I'm here to tell you something. I pray for God to reveal Himself to me, and that's when I start meeting people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Ricky Davis. UE Entertainment, you guys, the guys I'm here doing recovery with, some of the people I'm chairing meetings, I'm doing fundraisers. You know, we started a Crystal Meth Anonymous here in Athens, and I'm telling you, I'm here for the ride, but this ain't my shindig. This ain't my rodeo, not anymore. And there's a very special person.
So hold on, can I interrupt you real quick? So,
yeah, go right ahead.
Like, okay, so right when you're coming out of this, like this revival from the Narcan, right?
Okay. Right.
And you're starting to notice, like, you're kind of recognizing people. And then what was the word you used? You know what? When you came to, you knew God. I forgot.
He recruited me.
Yeah. So what is that? What do you mean? Like, you knew, like, something like you're gonna start serving God. I mean, what does that mean?
Well, we all serve Him whether we know it or not, or whether we like it or not. You know, he even called some of the worst kings that ever reigned on earth his servants. The very first person I thought of coming out of this was my daughter. They call her Mossberg Jr.
Okay.
And
baby Moss, she's fighting her.
Yeah, she's about she's 25 today.
Oh, happy birthday, Mossberg Jr.
Michaela Pearl. Yeah, and she's got her own battles with addiction and other things, but she has always been my favorite human being. Mm-hmm. And but she is the example of, it's not just her, it's all of us. God saved me for things like this, to tell what I've been through, to be in service positions, to help others. I like to call it the sheep in wolf's clothing effect. Mm-hmm. There's so many people out there that would get more out of this than they ever would a church service, a counseling session,
yeah,
incarceration. Yeah. People aren't going to, there's a lot of people out there that aren't going to respond to what is necessarily given on all these platforms, these professional platforms. Mm-hmm. And I'm not taking anything away from counseling, but how many people overdose because the fact that they couldn't respond to the pastor, the counselor, or the judge?
Yeah, yeah.
Or the correctional officer, you know.
So what you're saying is like, you need that brother. Like, I want to be that brother to them, yeah.
Right.
Same level, eye-to-eye type of
absolutely
relationship. I dig that. Very important. I mean, I think that's why the fellowship means so much, like the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel, man. That's
without parallel.
Yeah, that's the that's the medicine, man. You know what I mean? And I like that you said that.
Being able to identify with somebody that knows your struggle. They might not know your story, but they know what the outcome can be, and they do know how to turn that page because they've been there.
Right. Rather than somebody, you know, you're sitting there, you might be forced to sit there, and you're just like, somebody's talking to you, and you're like, yo, what is this, you know, what is this dude talking about, man? You know, I'm just now getting over, you know, diarrhea for the last 2 weeks, man. I cannot connect. What you're saying is not, you're not feeding me right now. I don't get it. You know what I mean?
It reminds me of in coaching or in working with another person, there's a rule. It's called the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. And it means that 80% of the time, if I'm the one being there of service, 80% of the time I ought be listening.
Yeah.
20% of the time I ought be talking. And if I'm talking more than I'm listening,
yeah,
then I'm probably not being of service. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of like what Moss is saying, like the ability to be heard and seen, mm-hmm, is what all of us are kind of looking for, right? Yeah. I mean, we just want someone to be like, I understand you.
Right.
Right? And that value you can really get from a peer, from someone who's been where you've been, or at least can understand where you've been, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's, I mean, the value of just having a conversation and somebody knowing what you're talking about, and they're not talking to you,
yeah,
they're talking with you.
Yeah.
You know, and they relate to you, yeah, and the things that they're saying back to you, you're understanding, like, oh shit.
Right, and then you're getting something out of it,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, now there's value because you're you, and I know you recognize me, okay? We recognize each other. And when you're feeding me, I believe it.
Yeah, right.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
You said the word, the most important word, I think. And it comes down to this word, whether you're talking spirituality, whether you're talking about recovery, whether you're talking about fellowship or any relationship you're in, your wife, your kids, your brothers, your sponsor, God, it's connection. It's all connection. Yeah. And that's what identifying with someone does. It's being able to identify with someone is the path to that connection. If you can't connect with somebody, you're a counselor.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't have some sort of connection with the person you're trying to serve in those moments,
yeah,
you're probably not going to get very far at that time.
Right.
The music. If I can't connect to the listeners with the music, then they're not going to enjoy it. They're not going to like it.
Mm-hmm.
The radio show, everybody who tunes in and stays tuned in is connecting with you guys because they know they see themselves. It's most important thing.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's definitely a combination of what both of you guys are saying plus more. I think, you know, the connection of like somebody that you can relate to, and then taking that position as a listener instead of a preacher, really helps somebody that's trying to search for sobriety and try to be in.
Or just well-being.
Yeah, period. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I dig that. So that's the role you're filling right now, a peer. You're being a friend, you're being a brother, you're being a peer to, you know, well, you are a house parent, so there is a little bit of an hierarchy going on in that deal. You're like, yo, here's the cup. You know what you got to do. But I like you, but this shit better not be hot, bro, because I got to follow rules.
You just described my least favorite part of this. Yeah. But yeah, it's exactly this.
That's it.
Perfect portrayal.
Yeah. But it's a tough position. But you know what? That means, man, personally, that's growth, dude. You're taking on the responsibility to help these guys in your community. You know, your home right now is your community, bro. And you're caring for these dudes, man. And like, you ain't got no control over the decisions anybody's make, but there's always a group conscience that has got to be at the forefront of, you know, what you're doing there, man. You want the house to run good. You want people to gain some sobriety, some recovery, things of that nature. So, dude, it's a tough position, man, because you live amongst them. That's why this position's tough. You live amongst these dudes. You are a peer there with extra responsibilities, dude, and that's always really tough.
Well, Christian hit the nail on the head because I'm a talker. And I really had to understand what they meant when I went in the rooms and they said, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. But I have to listen to these guys to understand what they need, what they want, what their goals are. And, you know, I have to get them to listen back.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. That's really good stuff, man. Now in this journey, right, as you were recruited, okay, now, you know, what are you feeling? Are you feeling like excited, nervous, all that kind of stuff? Like, what's going on with you, like, in your heart and in your head during this whole journey?
At first, while I'm still in the bathtub, it was an overwhelming guilt. I was like, how could I do this?
Well, you think, especially if your daughter is the first thing that kind of like surfaces in your third eye, your daughter comes through, right?
Well, it's the voice that I told you about. Yeah, I'm thinking about her because it's like I think that was the first time I realized just how much that she watched me, you know, has always watched me, just how much she loved me. But, you know, Mom, Dave, the friends that I've lost, you know, and then of course that voice that was with me in the valley that I'm talking about, I could feel the presence of my creator there with me. And immediately I'm like, how could I do this to you?
Wow.
You know, I've already been shown not to.
Oh, man.
The people that I've suffered the tragedy of the people I've lost. How could I turn around and do this to you when you've been trying to build me up for so much more? And the guilt was overwhelming. And it was very devastating, but you know, it had to come. All of that had to happen. I had to be broken down.
Yeah.
I had to be broken down like a shotgun.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah,
man. That's
so was that be your last time using, or because you still had some time before you were able to get into treatment?
Well, I knew I was going to detox, and I wish I could say that was my last time using. That was my last time using heroin. And I still had some things I had to sew up, so I justified a little meth use here, you know, for the next couple of days.
Just a little bit.
The next day, I called him back and said, hey, look, man, is there any way we can speed up this process? You know, you said I'm a month waiting list. He said, yeah, why? I mean, maybe why? And I said, because I died last night. Yeah. He said, what are you doing Saturday? So that's the day he picked me up.
So now you know.
Yeah, but did you die
somewhere? Just tell him you died.
But no, he's like I say, I've known Edmund for many years, and there's a couple other guys in the program I've known for a long time, Mickey, Wesley, and people from back home. And there's lots of people around here. But on a real note, I think the best advice I took. And they call themselves Modern Pathways to Recovery for a reason. They do advocate for Narcan and harm reduction. MATs is a part of that. And, you know, I started to try and go at first without anybody knowing, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to keep my responsibilities without and go through detox. And Evan asked me, don't you need detox? I'm like, no, I got this. Well, I had some boxing strips in my freaking wallet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't tell him. But I got caught up with. I got caught up with real quick. And instead of throwing me out of the program, they showed me grace. And they sent me to one of the local clinics. And I got involved in a program. And to this day, I still am the right way using MATs.
Now, explain what MATs are for someone who might not understand what that is.
Medically assisted treatment. You know, you've seen the methadone clinics. You've seen people on Suboxone and Subutex. Yeah. Not everybody takes it right. And, and there's other means, too. They got a shot called Vivitrol. It's been around. I think it was originally created for alcoholics, but now they treat addicts with it, too.
Yeah, they got a shot for Suboxone now, too. I forget. I can't think of the name right now for some reason, but it's just it's a shot you take that it's a Suboxone.
It lasts for 30 days or something.
Yeah, once a month. Yep, mm-hmm.
And at first, I was like, no way. That's just swapping from one to another. And I want, and you know, Big E, he sat me down. He said, listen, you got a lot of things going on. You got transitions you're going to make. And this, he never told a lie. Change is the biggest factor. There's been one transition after the next this whole time of recovery. Mm-hmm. January 22nd is my last, you know, the day I joined up and my clean date. But I listened to him. And I went and got the MATs. It's been easier. He says, you're going to wind up right back out there on the needle if you don't. And I fought it at first in my mind.
Yeah.
But that was the first time and not the last time that I said, you know what? I listened to my words of my dear old dad, the guy I shot, right? He says, Mike, everything you've done up until this point didn't work. Mm. So don't do that. Listen to people.
Yeah.
You know,
take some advice. Absorb it. Be open minded. You know what I mean? Don't get lost in that negative emotion where it's, you know, what is it doing to the inside of you? Why are you reacting so wrong to you know, these words? He's trying to give you help.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's medically assisted treatment, so there's more to it than just the meds. I mean, you know, there's counseling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've got a personal coach. Everybody gets their own coach. And I've got mine's a deacon here in Athens. And there's classes. I volunteered for some classes and wound up getting a T-shirt out of it. They call it the Proud Program here in Athens. But it's actually some good stuff. And they give you lots of good tools. You know, honestly, I believe that there's always a reason behind things. That might have also been one of the avenues to help me do what I do here and now. Because some of the coaching tools I picked up through my program, getting these MATs has definitely helped me helping other people in service positions here in recovery.
Well, I love when it comes to, you know, people trying to, you know, attempting to live a sober life and like trying to get a hold of, you know, recovery and what that looks like and living and being okay and being manageable. I love hearing like the variety and, you know, what you guys out there are offering to the residents out there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of different things going on over there. And I think that's a definitely, because, you know, it shows that, you know, you're being paid attention to. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody is, like, thinking up ways of for you and the other guys there to really deal with, like, their life right now. And, like, what can come of this? Methods on how to treat what you're going through, you know? It's not just go here 2 weeks later, hey, you got to go to work, man. You know what I'm saying? Make the group meeting on Friday. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's none of that. Right. Yeah. And don't get...
there's so much more.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mentioned Edmund. His partner is Shane Sims. And Shane Sims runs kind of the connection for recovery here in Athens. He's director. It's called PLR, People Living in Recovery. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the, you know, where all the different recovery... platforms, the recovery houses, the meeting groups, whatever. But he's also, and he's a chaplain at the local jail. But he also is affirmative in his action in recovery. You know, the first thing I've ever voted for came through my recovery. And that was that Bill 1013
yeah.
that just recently passed. It now because I voted, I helped in the grand scheme of things. The bill get passed that requires the state of Georgia and all the insurance companies to offer financial aid or insurance for mm-hmm. Mental health disorders and addiction treatment.
Yeah. Big bill.
You know,
big
and I was piece involved of legislation. In that. Yeah. I got involved in something bigger.
Doesn't
than
that feel
myself.
Good? Yeah, doesn't that feel good, yeah. man? Like to really, that's an action step towards like, you know, helping
right.
this thing that's like hindered you for, you know, your whole life, you know what I'm saying? So I love that. I love that you guys, you know, organized around that too. That's a good place you're at, bro.
Oh,
that's
absolutely.
Impressive, dude. I love that. And it's out in Athens, right?
Right. I'm learning from the best. Modern Pathways to Recovery.
Hey, that's good stuff,
that's what
dude.
They call it.
Now, so you went from a while in abstinence to harm reduction then. Is that how that worked? Or
no,
what did it happen it immediately?
Yeah,
as soon
I
as
went
you...
straight in.
Oh, okay.
I went straight in. Yeah, yeah. That was the whole point. If I had been able to go through abstinence, it would have been make or break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty much what he was explaining to me, that if I tried to just tackle the whole world, just cold turkey quit,
mm-hmm.
So insanity is repeating the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. I've done that before. I've been mm-hmm. in different recovery centers before, and it was cold turkey quit. Where did it get me?
Yeah.
Try something new.
Yeah.
You know, and the great thing about it is it's all supervised. So at any time, you can gradually take yourself off.
Yeah.
Instead of taking it to the level of overdosing or quitting cold turkey and winding up right back out there on the streets. And, you know,
it sounds like it's working for you, man.
Recovery.
Yeah.
It is. A lot of people don't consider that recovery, but, you know, I see it like this. It's bringing me back to life. I've got a connection with my higher power and with people, some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't hindered me. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say because of MATs, I've had the greatest life. No, but that hasn't hindered me. And it has done its job.
Yeah.
I have not been going back out on the needle, and I don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it.
They say Narcan is an enabling factor. No, it's not. It's keeping people out of ditches.
Mm.
You know, it's you know, and like I call it, chemical defibrillation. It's saving lives. MAT saves lives. If it's recovery based
mm-hmm.
and it's doing what its purpose is meant for, then it's saving lives. And that's what it's all about. Keeping people from demise, from destruction.
No, yeah.
Well,
awesome.
And I remember my buddy Mark would say one of the first shows we did, I interviewed him, and he's a coach and a counselor and a minister. And he said, you know, I don't care what you call it. If what you're doing is causing harm to you and the people you love, you should stop. Right. And it's just simplifies it right there. Right.
Yeah.
And so and that's where you are now, is you're no longer causing harm to the people you love and to yourself. And it's like, you know, it's on the back of the chip. To thine own self be true.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah.
And you got to go through the process. The other thing that I like is that what you said about this and educating myself and those who are listening, which is that you're not just going and getting a substitute for the substance you were taking.
Yeah.
You're also being given tools, counseling. You have a coach. You're doing group therapy. You're serving. You have this community around you that's helping you, right? And there's also a plan that this is not an indefinite process.
No, there's always
when you're ready to begin to start weaning down, that you can eventually kind of like get to a point where you can you won't be on that, right? And there's a someone I know Mike was talking about today's his 1 year,
mm-hmm.
right? And he was on MAT for a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was able to get off it. And he'll tell us too, the same story as Moss here, that MAT was the thing, that medically assisted treatment was the thing that really helped him to make that transition. And it's interesting because last week we talked about harm reduction, mm-hmm. you know.
It's coming.
We didn't plan it.
It's coming. It's coming, baby. The wave. That's what I'm talking wave. About. The wave, man. You know.
I think it was somewhere in the AA big book, wasn't it, where it was stated that one day, eventually, science and medicine will catch up to alcoholism and addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what we have with harm reduction and MATs. I mean, I think that's a perfect example of what we got going on.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at you, right, and you know, you know, and you only shared a snippet, but it was very impactful snippets of, you know, the trauma, what you went through in addiction, the devastation. Like, man, like, how do you even come back from that, dude? Yeah. How do you do that? You know what I'm saying? How do you come back from that? But you're living proof that there is a way, and you're working a program with options that has variety, that gives you choices. You know what I mean? You're still doing this, you know, this MAT style of treatment. You're in the rooms, you're doing the steps. You know what I'm saying? You got a sponsor.
I'm connected to God.
And you got That's it right there. From your spiritual awakening that you talked about.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was really deep. And it was really interesting how it was connected to the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The way he was relating to his story and his life.
Yeah.
You know, and to your point that we didn't get to this whole chronological order. It was like... was done. Well done, man.
It's a well done show, dude. Yeah. Mossberg, man. Mad love to you, dude, man. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Download the app, bro. Download the app, man. It is the Netflix of recovery. Thank you all again. Peace.